there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Week 3 is already here. Let's talk to the pros. Hello, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I am Ryan Warmly, joined as I am every Friday of football season by Derek Brown and Andrew Erickson and Matthew Friedman. Friedman, last night, Thursday Night Football, I know you bet on this game. Very interesting ending. What was going through your mind as you watched that?
Well, I was sleeping, fortunately, so I didn't have to endure the pain. And obviously, everyone responding on Twitter was very reasonable with their takes, not at all dunking on me with the L's, which I deservedly earned. But a good game when I was watching it, but very happy to miss the end of it.
That's very unlike Twitter to not be dunking on you for the L's that you deserve. Erickson, this wasn't quite Chiefs Chargers that we had in week two, but any fantasy interest here in last night's game?
I mean, our favorite waiver wire breakout candidate player sleeper of the year, David Njoku. Baby, let's go. Friedman, Debro, and myself were all on David Njoku to finally see him have a breakout game. I was excited.
Yeah, Debra, I think a lot of us were then off of David Njoku after the first 2 weeks, but we finally saw the breakout here in week three.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is where we take the victory laps. That's what happens at this point, right? You know, 2 weeks of stinking it up, and then nobody starts him because everybody I tweeted out, I was like, oh, look at David Njoku. And everybody's like, I sat him. Ugh. And I'm like, well, I did too.
After week one, you can still like, oh, I'll play him another week. But after 2 weeks of that, I'm sure he was on most people's benches. Let's make sure everyone can find the three of us online. Debro's Twitter handle is @Debro_FFB. Erickson is @AndrewErickson_. Friedman is @MattFTheOracle. And I can be found @RyanWarmly. And of course, we can be found everywhere online @FantasyPros. Before moving on with the show, I just want to quickly tell you about My Playbook. If you want the edge against your league mates for the rest of the season, My Playbook is number one in-season toolkit to help you manage your fantasy football lineups, make the best decisions, and dominate your leagues. Sync your league with My Playbook today and get access to custom advice, player news, stats, projections, waiver and lineup suggestions, a trade analyzer, a trade finder, and so much more. Check out My Playbook at fantasypros.com/myplaybook or download our Fantasy Football My Playbook app in the App Store or Google Play. Keep in mind that you have to go premium to get the most out of My Playbook. So if you're not currently a subscriber, we've got an amazing offer that gets you premium for 6 months without paying us a dime. You can check out that deal at fantasypros.com/offers.
Matchup previews.
Another full slate of games here, guys. So we will jump right into it. Sunday, early afternoon slate. Game number one, Raiders at Titans. Friedman, what is the key matchup here?
Yeah, Ryan, I first of all, I just want to say I acknowledge your restraint in not putting the Ravens game at the top of the sheet here. So we're already off to a very strong and unbiased start here. I am looking at the Tennessee pass rush against this Las Vegas pass blocking unit. Even without Edge, Harold Landry, the Titans defense has a marked advantage over the Raiders offensive line in our Fantasy Pros unit power rankings, number 13 versus number 30. And specifically, the Titans have excelled at rushing the quarterback this year. And the Raiders have struggled in pass protection. Number 6 in adjusted sack rate for the Titans defense, number 25 for the Raiders offense. And I think part of the key to this game is center Andre James for the Raiders. He was out last week with a concussion. And in his absence, the right side of that line was extremely vulnerable. You had a rookie right guard in Dylan Parham who shifted to center. You had an undrafted fourth-year backup, Lester Cotton, getting his first NFL start at right guard. I mean, Jeffrey Simmons, defensive tackle, second-team All-Pro Jeffrey Simmons, could destroy those two if they end up starting in the interior again this week. And then on the end of the line, you have right tackle Jermaine Elumanior, a journeyman backup who's played most of his snaps at guard. He will be outmatched by Edge Denico Autry. So if the Titans pass rush is able to pressure Derek Carr, then that entire Raiders offense could underperform Carr, Devontae Adams, Waller, Renfro. So that to me is the key for this game.
Jermaine Elumanior, former Ravens. I was able to sneak them into game one.
And there we have it.
Devro, Freeman was talking about the pass rush and, you know, pass blocking for the Raiders. You had Devontae Adams as one of your key matchups here, coming off of a pretty weak showing in week two. Do you think we're going to see a step up in week three?
I think he's going to crush. I mean, look, we saw last time the Tennessee Titans tried to cover an alpha wide receiver. How'd that go? Oh, that's right. Stephon Diggs just handed him a lunch. I think it'd be much the same for Adams. If Christian Fulton's not able to make the return, hell, even if he can make the return, Adams can have his way with this secondary. I mean, we're looking at Roger McCreary is struggling. He's playing like a rookie. Then they're running some combination, because if Fulton's not out there, it's going to be some combination of Chris Jackson. Oh, look at him. He's given up a 118 passer rating in his career. No worries there. Or Caleb Farley, who's also given up a 117 passer rating in his career. And no worries there. So Devontae Adams, I think, is going to be the tip of the spear for Carr this week. I think he can crush. And if the Raiders are doing this and Adams is having himself a game, they're going to have to keep up on the other side with the Titans. So I think that's going to come via Treylon Burks, who last week we saw his route participation go up from 38 to 63%. His target share has been fantastic, and he's been amongst the league leaders in targets per route run and yards per route run. So I really think that this could be Burks, like the big coming out game, the explosion game, something similar a la to what we saw from Garrett Wilson last week. So those are the two wide receivers that I think are going to be pivotal in this game.
And Erickson, you're looking at the run game here.
Yeah, I'm looking at Derrick Henry for the Tennessee Titans. The last two times Derrick Henry has totaled fewer than 16 carries, the next week, he's averaged over 200 rushing yards. So the Titans like to go back to Derrick Henry in games where he doesn't do a lot, and I think that he can be effective against this Raiders run defense. Last week, they allowed over 7 yards per carry to Darrell Williams of the Arizona Cardinals, and they're going to be possibly without Denzel Perryman, their starting linebacker. He missed last week with an ankle injury, and he's logged back-to-back DNPs to start the week. So people are trying to fade the big dog right now, and those are going to be your last words.
Game number two on our early afternoon slate, Saints at Panthers. Erickson, what's the key matchup here?
Yeah, so I'm looking at quarterback Jameis Winston against this Carolina pass defense that's been really stingy throughout the first 2 weeks of the year. So they've ranked third in terms of fewest passing yards allowed per game, but it comes with the caveat that they have faced the Cleveland Browns and the New York Giants. So the number is definitely boosted based on the opponents that they've played. And I think Jameis Winston presents a much bigger threat as an actual passer, especially because he leads the NFL in air yards. So he's attacking downfield. We've all seen the number. Chris Olave, 1,000 air yards last week. It was 334 by my standards in the way that I track air yards. So they're going to attack downfield, and that's just something the Panthers have not been tested at. They've only allowed one attempt of 20-plus yards allowed downfield, and that was by linebacker Shaq Thompson. And a big injury in the Carolina secondary is Dante Jackson. He's their speed guy on the outside. He's dealing with a hamstring injury. So you have Chris Olave, a speed wide receiver who saw a 33% target share last week with Jameis Winston. I mean, even if Dante Jackson is out there, it takes one step in the wrong direction for him to tweak his hamstring. And then what do you know? 80-yard touchdown for Chris Olave. So with two teams that both rank top eight in terms of expected pass play rate. I think we'll see some fireworks from the passing game on both sides.
Friedman, I know you're looking at one wide receiver cornerback matchup in particular.
I'm looking at DJ Moore, who might not live up to Andrew Erickson's air yard supremacist standards, but I still think he's a pretty good wide receiver in his own right. He's just 25. He's the only wide receiver to finish top 10 in receiving in each of the past 3 years. Last year, he had 163 targets. This year, just 6 targets in each game, 93 yards and a touchdown on the year. He's had a string of tough cornerback matchups to start: Denzel Ward in week one, Adoree Jackson in week two, now Marshawn Lattimore in week three. I mean, that is a tough matchup. And based on the past 2 weeks, I think this is a tough start-sit decision for Moore in redraft leagues. Like, you probably have to start him this week, but man, you're not going to feel good about it. And I'm downgrading him in my rankings.
How do you feel about him long-term if you were looking at your rest of season rankings? Because I know as soon as Baker got there, a lot of people were really, really high on Moore, but it hasn't been there yet in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, starting in week four, he's got a nice matchup against the Arizona Cardinals. So hopefully that gives him a boost, but you do have to project him down a little bit because this Carolina Panthers offense, they're just not getting it done. And they're not running nearly enough plays. That is the key thing. They're just not playing with enough urgency. So just fewer opportunities for everyone in that offense.
Debro, what matchup are you looking at here?
I mean, if Carolina's not going to get it done through the air, then it's going to have to be with Christian McCaffrey. He saw 61% of the carries through 2 weeks, 18% target share, and yes, he had 100 yards on the ground last week. Still not the CMC of old type of performances. Maybe that's because we're hearing, you know, reports out of, oh, he's dealing with stiffness, whatever the hell that means. But I think that if they're not able to throw the ball, then I think that Christian McCaffrey is going to have himself a day, and it's going to be uphill sledding. We've seen what the Saints are able to do versus all things running back throughout this season. And if McCaffrey's not the guy catching passes on the other side, if it's not Olave going off, I think Jarvis Landry can have himself a game. I think he has the, if Dante Jackson is healthy, and I'm saying with a big if, then he has the easiest cornerback matchup on the board against Miles Hartsfield in the slot. And I think Landry, we saw week one, Winston targeted him a ton because he had the easiest matchup in the slot. We could see that again in Hartsfield. Through his career, has been beatable. 72% catch rate, 112 passer rating allowed. So we could see Landry be the dark horse to lead the Saints in targets this week.
Let's get into our next game and also our first pick in the Over-Under Challenge. The Over-Under game is sponsored by No House Advantage, who are giving away $10,000 in weekly and season-long prizes, including a grand prize of $3,000. Check them out today at nohouseadvantage.com or download the app on the app stores. Use promo code PROS at sign up for a first deposit match up to $50. Our first over-under challenge of the day is Travis Kelce over or under 14 fantasy points against the Colts. So be on the lookout for that as the guys share their picks for Kelce and also some of their other favorite over-unders from this week's challenge throughout the show, which listeners can find at fantasypros.com/challenge. But for now, let's turn to Debro for his key matchup in Chiefs Colts.
I think the first matchup off the top, and look, I know in draft season I was a hater, but I'm in on him this week, and that's Juju Smith-Schuster against Indianapolis' own defense. You look at Smith-Schuster's splits this year, his yards per route run have cratered against man coverage. Now, he's top five right now against zone coverage. Why does this all matter? Because the Colts deploy zone on 69 to 76% of their snaps. So Juju is going to get peppered across the middle with targets against my favorite cornerback that I love to, I feel like I talk about him every single week, but my favorite cornerback to target in these matchups is Kenny Moore, because Kenny Moore is not good. 81% catch rate, 46 passer rating. So I think Juju is going to eat versus zone defense. And it, look, if Juju is going to eat versus zone defense, I think Travis Kelce can go along for the ride. Give me the over for No House Advantage, over 14 points in this matchup.
Erickson, what matchup are you looking at in this one?
Looking at Clyde Edwards-Helaire against this Colts run defense. Now, CH has averaged just 11 touches per game over the last 2 weeks as the quote-unquote RB1 in the Chiefs offense. He's been really efficient with his limited opportunities against two soft run defenses. I don't think that's the case here against the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts rank second in run defense EPA, and that's been without stud linebacker Shaq Leonard. They've allowed just 2.8 yards per carry to opposing running backs, and Leonard has been practicing all week, so there's a chance that he suits up in this game and further bolsters this Colts defensive attack on the Chiefs. So I think CH is going to struggle here on the ground, and I think that he's a prime sell high candidate before this game.
If you're not able to sell high on him, are you still starting him and just a little more pessimistic about it, or are you actually considering benching him even after his first 2 weeks?
I mean, right now, the RB2 territory is a wasteland in fantasy football, so I doubt that you're going to actually find a decent alternative to Edwards-Helaire, but it's more of a buyer beware type of thing. Like, there's a chance that he busts in this game if he's not as evolved as a receiver. So I think that CEH has... Again, I am trying to ship him off before he has a dud game. And for my under-over challenge, Travis Kelce, I'm going under on Travis Kelce. His expected fantasy points is 13.3, which is under the 14-point mark we're looking at here. So that's what I'm going under.
Friedman, you picked Jonathan Taylor in one of our games last week, and you called it low-hanging fruit. You are now going back to that well, even though it turns out it wasn't such low-hanging fruit in week two.
Look, I'm not trying to be a hero here, okay? I will talk about the guy who was the number one overall pick. You guys leave me that fruit each week. I will do it fine. Yeah, he massively disappointed last week. Had just 9 carries, 1 target, and a 24-0 blowout loss. But for the season, still has 238 yards and a touchdown. The Colts are underdogs, but he still has a good matchup. Last year, the Chiefs defense was number one in rush success rate allowed. This year, it's number 25, right? So the team can run on the Chiefs. And the Colts are built on the running game. I would expect another 100 yards and a touchdown from Taylor. And then, you know, I'll take the over for Kelce at 14 fantasy points. He's predictably the top pass catcher for the Chiefs. Number one on the team in targets, receptions, yards receiving. Number one at the position with 14.9 fantasy points per game. He's going against a Gus Bradley defense that has just historically been gutted by Travis Kelce anytime he's gone against them. And just looking at this Colts defense, they lost strong safety, Kerry Willis, free safeties, Andrew Sandejo and George Odom this offseason. And, you know, granted, the season is still young, but they're number 31 in pass DVOA, DVOA against tight ends this year. So I think Kelce smashes this number of 14 in the no house advantage over under challenge.
Before we move on with the show, I want to tell you about Manscaped. Football is back, baby, and as we watch an elite young crop of quarterbacks sling the ball around the field, your friends at Manscaped are here to help you sling your beautiful balls all season long. With Manscaped's state-of-the-art tech, we'll have your weapon looking more loaded than the AFC West. Football may be rough, but your ball care doesn't have to be with Manscaped. Join the 6 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with code JOEYP. Since I've started using Manscaped, the one word I would use to describe how I feel is confidence. Well, that and comfort. And now you can feel the same way with the best value yet, the Platinum Package, a superstar lineup of ways to keep you comfortable and looking good. At quarterback, the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer to help limit mistakes and protect the balls. At running back, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer. On the O-line, it's the Crop Preserver ball deodorant and Crop Reviver ball toner. At wide receiver, it's the dynamic duo of Ultra Premium Body Wash and Ultra Premium 2-in-1 Shampoo Plus Conditioner. At tight end, it's the product that makes your end look tight, Manscaped's anti-chafing boxer briefs. And of course, on defense, there's the Ultra Premium deodorant. Plus, avoid fumbling with the Shed travel bag as a free bonus. This has got to be a Super Bowl winning roster, but don't take my word for it. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with the code JOEYP. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com when you use code JOEYP. Manscaped, for turning your player into an MVP. Let's get into game four, the game everybody has circled on their calendars for this week. The biggest matchup by far on Sunday, Ravens at Patriots. Friedman, what's your key matchup here?
Yeah, I'm going to be incredibly sexy with this matchup. I'm looking at the Patriots run defense against the Ravens run offense. So even though the Ravens are, you know, only, I'm using air quotes there, number 11 this year in rush rate, they are a running team to their core. That's what happens when you have Lamar Jackson and offensive coordinator Greg Roman. And obviously in the offseason, they signaled that they were going to lean more into the running game when they traded away number one wide receiver Marquise Brown and replaced him with two tight ends in the draft. You know, but I think they could struggle in the run this week against the Patriots. So number one running back J.K. Dobbins, it's not certain that he's returning. Like last week, he practiced in full and still didn't play. So no certainty that he's playing this week. Obviously, number two running back Gus Edwards is out. And left tackle Ronnie Stanley, dealing with his ankle injury, he's yet to appear this year after appearing in just one game last year and six games the year before that. Backup left tackle Juwan James, he's out with an Achilles injury. So you have all of these injuries adding up. And with that, the Ravens offense has been predictably terrible on the ground this year, like bottom five in most rushing efficiency metrics. And the Patriots defense has been average at worst. So I think the Pats could keep the Ravens in check on the ground, which would make them one dimensional on offense. And that is not good against the Bill Belichick defense. And yeah, the Ravens have had success in the air this year, but they've also been helped out by their schedule. In weeks one and two, they faced the bottom two defenses in pass DVOA with the Jets and then the Dolphins without one of their starting cornerbacks in Byron Jones. So I'm skeptical that the Ravens pass offense is as good as it has looked, and their run offense is stagnated. So if Dobbins doesn't return for this game, if Stanley doesn't return, I could see the Ravens overall struggling against the Patriots defense.
Yeah, there's such a huge difference between when Lamar runs the ball for the Ravens and when anybody else has done so far this year. I mean, I don't actually have the number in front of me, but I have to imagine they're averaging like 2.5 yards per carry. It's been abysmal when it's not Lamar who's actually doing the running. If Dobbins does return, are you starting him right away in his first game since 2020?
I mean, it would just depend on the options that I have, but I would view him as a high-end RB3.
Erickson, what matchup are you looking at here?
I'm looking at quarterback Mac Jones against this Ravens secondary and defense that's still licking its wounds from last week when Tua threw for over 400 yards against them. And looking back at that game, you know, one of the reasons why Tua was able to find so much success, besides the fact that the secondary was dealing with injuries, was they weren't putting any pressure on Tua. He saw just a 20% pressure rate, which obviously led to the 400 passing yards from a clean pocket specifically. You look at Mac Jones this year, PFF's 13th highest graded quarterback from a clean pocket, but 30th under pressure. You look at what the Patriots offensive line has done so far this year, Mac Jones has faced the fourth fewest pressure rate this season, 24%, which is actually one spot ahead of Tua Tagovailoa. So for me, if he's going to have time in the pocket, I think that he's going to find success against Baltimore's secondary. Mac Jones this year ranks 7th in passing yards, or in terms of passing air yards, 6th in deep ball rate, 8th in expected passing yards. So quietly, he's put up some top 10 numbers from an aerial perspective. So I think Mac Jones can take advantage, even if Jakobi Meyers is limited.
Debra, what are you looking at here?
I think if Mac Jones is not be throwing it deep, I think he's going to be checking it down all day to Ramondre Stevenson. The Ravens have not been good over the last two seasons against pass-catching backs. Stevenson took over the pass-catching role. He had a 60% route run rate last week, and Ravens 30th in DVOA. They've already allowed the second most receptions and third most receiving yards to running backs. So if he's not going deep, Mac can get it done by checking down to Stevenson. And I'm buying into Baltimore throwing. I think that Bateman is going to be one of the big primary beneficiaries, if I can ever get words out of my mouth today, versus this secondary. Bateman has had fantastic back-to-back games. I know the targets have not been massive. Two long touchdowns this week. I'm sorry, I'm not scared of Jalen Mills and Jonathan Jones, who've combined for a 60% catch rate, 128 passer rating, and Bateman's been balling out on that limited volume. Third in yards per route run, 20th in targets per route run. So, yeah, I think the two sexy, like, under-the-radar players in this game are Stevenson and Bateman.
Game number 5, Texans at Bears. Not exactly a thriller, it looks like, going into this one. Erickson, what's the key matchup here?
Says you, Dave Montgomery against this Texans run defense. I am smashing the over on Dave Montgomery 13 fantasy points because this Texan defense cannot stop the run. They've led the most rushing yards through the first 2 weeks of the year, 143.5 per game. They've missed a league-high 27 tackles. Yes, Dave Montgomery is not the most explosive running back, but what does he do better than most? Break tackles. So far, he ranks 5th in the NFL in terms of broken tackles force. So I'm firing up Dave Montgomery. I love Khalil Herbert. Think he's a better running back, but the Bears want to establish the run in terms of pass play rate and pass play rate over expectation. They rank last in both those categories. Montgomery got 17 touches for over 130 yards last week, 77% opportunity share in week 2. So he's still their bell cow, and I think he's going to feast here.
Debro, I know you're looking at the running back on the other side of this matchup in Damian Pierce, and I specifically wanted to highlight him because we got a lot of questions on Twitter about how do we feel about Damian Pierce? Is it time to bench him? Is it time to cut him? Is it time to trade him? People were not happy with what they've seen the first 2 weeks. What do you think about him going into this week 3 matchup?
I think you start him confidently as a top 24 running back. And the matchup, his increasing workload, because he got 88% of the rushing share after only 40% in week one, his snaps trickled up last week. And he's got a fantastic matchup against the Bears defense. They can't stop any running back right now. They're allowing the 12th highest rushing EPA, 7th highest explosive run rate, and the most rushing yards per game. So I think it's going to be Pierce time this week. And I know David Montgomery's going to have a good game. I'm not disputing that. But I think this is a good avenue for Chicago, who has allowed Justin Fields only 28 passing attempts over the first 2 weeks because he's been pressured at a top three clip. Houston can't pressure that well. They're middle of the road. I think Fields is going to be able to pass the ball and given leeway to do so this week against a pass defense that's 7th worst in explosive pass rate allowed and 12th worst as far as EPA per dropback allowed. So if you're struggling for quarterback options and you have Fields still on your bench or in a 2-quarterback league, I think he offers a lot of upside this week.
Freeman, what are you keeping an eye on here?
Yeah, looking at the two number one wide receivers in this game, two wide receivers in underperforming offenses. Brandon Cooks, 22 targets on the season, but just 136 yards, 6.2 yards per target, no touchdowns. But that volume is elite, and the Bears' pass defense is average. I think we get a bounce-back game for Cooks in this spot. And then on the other side, Darnell Mooney, he was one of my fade candidates this offseason. If you have him, I don't think you can start him with any type of certainty. He's a desperation option until we see more from him and this offense. Just 5 targets, 2 receptions, 4 yards on the season. He's got a good matchup in the slot against Desmond King. So if you have to start him, maybe you get something good because of the matchup. Like we've seen a spot where he's had ceiling games in the past. So far, all we've seen from him is his floor this year. So I think you don't want to start him, but if you have to, at least he has a good matchup.
Can't believe none of you picked Mr. Zero Catches for 0 yards and 0 touchdowns, Cole Kmet, in this one. Let's move to game 6, Bills at Dolphins, the actual marquee game of the Sunday slate. This one is going to be super fun. D-Bro, what's the key matchup?
I think everybody's scared and freaking out about the Bills' pass defense, and I'm not telling you they haven't been awesome, but this is not the same pass defense. Tre'Davious White's still out. Now Dane Jackson's going to miss this game. This defense is going to be starting 2 rookies that are supposed to somehow contain Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle and Christian Benford and Kyrie Elam. And I'm not saying that they're bad corners, but they're rookies, and they're playing like it so far. 71% catch rate, 95% passer ratings allowed. We're asking Benford, who runs a 4-5, to stay step-for-step with Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. Good luck. So I think Tua and these wide receivers can have a good game here.
Yeah, good luck is definitely needed when you're going up against that duo, one of the scariest duos I can remember in some time. Erickson, what's your key matchup?
Yeah, I'm looking at these Bills wide receivers against the Miami secondary that's just basically been shredded in terms of giving up big plays. They rank last in yards per attempt allowed this season. Looking at Nick Needham, Xavier Howard, they both rank in the bottom 10 in terms of fantasy points allowed per coverage snap this season. Actually, undrafted free agent Kader Coho is actually the Dolphins' highest graded cornerback per PFF, but he's not even a starter. He only got to play last week because of a situational where Mike McDaniel put him in instead of Nick Needham, but I expect Nick Needham to be back in that position to start at least the game here in week 3. So looking at the 3 of Miami's starting quarterbacks, they all rank in the bottom 15 in terms of yards allowed per reception. Gabe Davis, top 5 in yards per catch this season, over 20 yards per reception. Isaiah McKenzie ranks 20th in yards per reception from the slot at 14. So you're seeing big plays from all of these Buffalo Bills wide receivers. I think they're going to continue to generate them against the Dolphins defense that has not shown that they can stop these explosive pass plays.
Friedman, you want to talk about the quarterbacks, 2 guys who came into this season with wildly different expectations, but both coming off pretty excellent games.
Yeah, I feel honor-bound to have to talk about Josh Allen and Tua Tagovailoa. Like, someone's got to mention Josh Allen, like the obligatory, hey, this guy's awesome, he's the number one quarterback in our rankings, start him this week. All right, now that I'm done with that, let's talk about Tua. He's the actual interesting guy. It's a tough matchup on paper, but as D-Bro said, you know, we have a Bills secondary that's down its top 2 corners, and their safeties are injured too. You know, Micah Hyde, he also suffered a neck injury last week. Jordan Poyer, has a foot injury. He didn't practice on Thursday after practicing on Wednesday. So that's a negative trajectory. So Tua, he had an awesome week last week. Everyone saw it. For the season, he's the number three quarterback behind Mahomes and Allen in composite expected points added and completion percentage over expectation. This game, just like last week's game, could shoot out, which means he could have another big week. We are now in the realm of Tua being a potential every week starter in one quarterback leagues, which is an amazing thing to see.
Before we move on with today's show, I'd like to take a moment to talk about No House Advantage. No House Advantage is changing the game by offering the most dynamic fantasy sports platform available today. Play in pick'em contests against other people for the shot at winning over $150,000 in cash. Download the app, choose a contest, select your player props, earn points for correct picks, and climb the leaderboard for your shot to win big money every week. You can also test your skills versus the house and 20 times your entry if you hit all your picks. Bet on up to 5 player prop over-unders or individual player matchups across every major sports league, including the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, PGA, MMA, and NASCAR. Sign up now with promo code PROS at nohouseadvantage.com or download the app in app stores to get a first deposit match up to $50. Make sure to check out No House Advantage today and experience daily fantasy sports redefined, because it's not just how you play, but where you play. You won't want to miss out on this. Let's move to game number 7, Eagles at Commanders, an NFC East matchup here. Freeman, what's the key matchup in this one?
This is disgusting. I'm just on a string of looking at disgusting matchups when I'm the one leading it. I'm looking at the Washington interior offensive line against Philadelphia defensive tackles Fletcher Cox and Javon Hargrave. Obviously, this is the revenge game, hashtag revenge game for Carson Wentz. Everyone is going to want to watch that, but I don't think he's going to play well if the interior of his offensive line doesn't do its job. And center Chase Rollier, he's out with a knee injury. His backup, Tyler Larson, is also out with an Achilles injury, and missing from last year's starting unit are left guard Eric Flowers and right guard Brandon Scherff. So in week 3, the Commanders will have 3 new year-over-year starters on the interior of their offensive line, and this exact trio has never played together as a unit. So given that situation, it looks like a great setup for defensive tackles Fletcher Cox and Javon Hargrave. Even with that said, I still think that these guys could do well. So you have right guard Wes Schweitzer, who is shifting over to center. He's made 19 starts in the interior of that offensive line since 2020, so he knows the system. Stepping up at right guard is backup Trey Turner, who's a 5-time Pro Bowler and has familiarity with the system from his time with the Panthers. And then at left guard, you have Andrew Norwell, who's new to the team, but he's another Panthers transplant, and he was an All-Pro in 2017. You know, he and Turner manned the interior of the Panthers offensive line together for 4 years. So even with injury issues, even with new starters, this is not a patchwork interior of the offensive line. So I think that those guys, they could do well against those defensive tackles. And if that happens, I think that means Carson Wentz is kept clean in the pocket, and it means that they're able to run the ball pretty well. And if that happens, I think all of the Commanders players could have improved performances relative to expectation.
Erickson, one of the reasons that Carson Wentz has been a good fantasy producer through 2 weeks is that stellar wide receiving core. Do you expect them to have a big week in week 3?
I don't. I have some concerns about some of them, specifically with Terry McLaurin here. So McLaurin only has a 14% target share in Washington's offense, which is the same as Antonio Gibson through the first 2 weeks. So Jahan Dotson is getting targeted, and Curtis Samuel leads the team in targets with a 24% target share over the first 2 weeks of the season. The only reason we haven't seen McLaurin's fantasy points really tank is because of his team leading air yard share. But every other metric is pointing towards Curtis Samuel seeing the better usage and suggesting he's the better fantasy option in this specific matchup. You look at McLaurin, who's lined up out wide on 82% of his snaps this season. That means he's going to face a lot of James Bradbury and Darius Slay, you know, two top tier cornerbacks for the Philadelphia Eagles. Darius Slay is PFF's number one graded cornerback this year, and Bradbury ranks inside the top 24. So I don't like the matchup here on the outside for McLaurin, and the way that they're feeding Curtis Samuel, he is second to only Cooper Kupp in terms of wide receiver touches this season. So I think Samuel is agnostic from the matchup. He's going to get his touches, whereas McLaurin, I think this is a boom or bust game. He's as a boom or bust player, and I think he's going to bust. So I would start Samuel over McLaurin straight up.
Debro, what are you looking at on the Eagles offense?
I think it's going to be similar, like fantastic days, continuing this trend for Miles Sanders and AJ Brown. We're looking at Miles Sanders, who's currently, nobody wants to talk about it, nobody wants to hear about it, but he's RB13 in fantasy right now. He's averaging 17 and a half touches, 95 and a half total yards, and he's 18th in weighted opportunities. And this Washington defense can't stop any running backs. They're allowing the 6th highest rush EPA and 13th highest explosive run rate. So I think it's another efficient day. Sanders is probably looking at 18, probably touches, and maybe gets over the 100-yard mark on the ground. And A.J. Brown, tried to tell people before the season started, guy's going to ball out if he gets targets. He's wide receiver 15. We saw him crush week one. And you're looking at all the other efficiency metrics, he's top 5 in target share and yards per route run, and he gets to run 73% of his routes about against Kendall Fuller and William Jackson, who've been terrible this year. I mean, the combined, they're allowing a 66% catch rate, 138 passer rating, and 2 receiving touchdowns, and only 21 targets. So A.J. Brown feast week is back.
Game number 8, Lions at Vikings. Erickson, what's the key matchup?
Looking at Jared Goff here against this Vikings secondary. I think Jared Goff's a strong streamer. If you're down Trey Lance, you need a quarterback. You know, he's QB9 and expected in fantasy points per game so far this year. Lions have the 8th highest implied team total, so I like the matchup environment in a projected shootout against the Vikings. Their secondary ranks 4th in passing yards allowed per game, 3rd in yards per attempt allowed, and they can be without starting safety Harrison Smith, who had a concussion last week. So a big hole in the back end of that defense. I think Jared Goff and all of his weapons, the sun god, I think that he's going to rip.
I was skeptical that you could make the case for Jared Goff, but that's a pretty compelling one. Friedman, what's your matchup here?
Yeah, looking at the 2 running backs for the Detroit Lions, through 2 games, the Vikings defense is number 32 in rush success rate and rush DVOA. So the Lions could dominate on the ground. Center Frank Ragnow, guard Jonah Jackson, both have a shot to return this week. And even without them last week, the Lions were great running the ball. Swift has 262 yards, 2 touchdowns from scrimmage this year, even with the ankle injury. And, you know, Williams is backup. He's got a league-high 7 carries inside the 10-yard line, and he's had a respectable 13 opportunities in each of the past 2 weeks. I think both of these guys are startable in fantasy.
Debro, what are you looking at in this one?
It's been tough times if you've had Dalvin Cook in fantasy, and this is the game. If they're going to get him going, he needs to get going in this one. And I don't know if it's injury, age, what have you, just a rough, slow start, but Dalvin Cook has not looked like the Dalvin Cook of old. And this is not just a volume thing, but looking at efficiency metrics, he's 26 in yards after contact per attempt, 31st in PFF's elusive rating. So this is a good avenue to get him going. And if he doesn't get going this week against a Lions rush defense that's 9th in success rate and 5th in rushing EPA, then I think it's time to start the week. Least worry about Dalvin Cook. Maybe he starts losing work to Alexander Mattison, but this is a good spot for him.
Game 9, the final one in our early afternoon slate, Bengals at Jets. Debro, sticking with you, what's the key matchup?
The Garrett Wilson party continues this week. I think he crushes Mike Hilton in the slot, and Wilson, we've seen him over the last 2 weeks. Target share has gone up. Target per route rate has gone through the roof. He's amongst elite leaders in yards per route run. I mean, the guy has been running almost 50% of his routes from the slot, and versus Mike Hilton, who last year gave up a 69% catch rate, 95 passer rating, Garrett Wilson is a player that I'm nudging him up my ranks, and I think he is going to be the leading receiver again for the Jets. A lot of times we see these breakouts from rookies, and people are like, do I buy in? No, it's time for you to ride the lightning. Just keep starting this guy. He might make my top 24 wide receivers for the week.
Certainly bold. Could definitely see it playing out that way, though. Erickson, what's your matchup?
Looking at the trenches here, Cincinnati O-line against this Jets defensive line. So Joe Burrow's been under constant pressure the past 2 weeks. He's taken a league-high 13 sacks, and everyone's freaking out about it. But, you know, his pressure rate, 31%, is the middle of the pack. So a lot of it can be attributed to Burrow holding onto the ball a little bit longer than he should be. It's not always on his offensive line. But either way, I think that the Bengals bounce back here from 0-2 start. The Jets defense, their pass defense ranks 29th in EPA on, and then their pressure rate is 27th. So I think that Burrow is going to be kept upright in this matchup. I think that their offensive line is going to hold up, and we're going to see Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and all their guys just rip this secondary to shreds.
Friedman, is this the week we see both Chase and Higgins feast?
Yeah, guys, go back in time 2 weeks and imagine I told you we were breaking down Bengals and Jets and you two had first shot in the outline and neither of you wanted to talk about Ja'Marr Chase or T. Higgins. Like, that would have been unthinkable. But this Jets defense is number 32 in pass DVOA. This is a keep the faith game for the Bengals and their wide receivers. I have both Chase and Higgins in the top 10. It's hard for two wide receivers both to go off in the same game, but against the Jets, they could do it this weekend. A bounce back spot as Erickson said, a bounce back spot for the entire Bengals offense.
Moving to the late afternoon slate, game number 10, Jags at Chargers. Friedman, what's the key matchup?
Yeah, I'm looking at these edge rushers for the Chargers, Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack going against left tackle Cam Robinson and right tackle Jawan Taylor. This offseason, the Jaguars took steps to fortify the interior of their offensive line. They drafted center Luke Fortner. They signed right guard Brandon Scherff. With those moves, we have seen quarterback Trevor Lawrence take a significant year-over-year step forward, but they still have Cam Robinson and Jawan Taylor as their offensive line bookends, and those guys are average. And sure, you know, plenty of teams would like to have average offensive tackle play, but average isn't good enough against Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack. Right, with those two leading the charge, nailed it. The Chargers defense is number 7 with a 9.2% adjusted sack rate. In our Fantasy Pros unit power rankings, the Chargers defensive line has a massive edge over the Jags offensive line, and that's, you know, because of Bosa and Mack. It's, you know, they have 6 sacks together on the season in just 2 games. So I think both of those guys, continue to dominate. And the Jags, I will admit, they have looked good on offense through 2 weeks. Lawrence, he's number 4 at the quarterback position in composite EPA and completion percentage over expectation. He's looked good, but given who they have at offensive tackle and given who they're going up against, I think the Jags offense comes down to earth with this matchup.
Erickson, what's the matchup you're looking at here?
I'm looking at the running back James Robinson against this Chargers run defense that doesn't really care to try to stop the run. And I think that Jacksonville can take advantage here. James Robinson, 25 touches for 78 yards and a score in week 2. He had all of his rushing yards come after contact. He was doing it all despite the torn Achilles. It doesn't matter. He's the clear-cut RB1 in this offense. And the Chargers, they are soft against the run. Nearly 5.8 yards per carry to opposing running backs and the most yards per attempt before contact. So with James Robinson, all last week was after contact. This week, he'll have a little bit more cushion to create more yards.
I was going to ask, just in looking at their earlier box scores this season, the Chargers haven't given up huge rushing totals, but you're right, the efficiency has been there for opposing running backs. Do you think this is still another year of them being a run funnel type of defense?
I think so. It goes back to their philosophy where they're just not, that's not their priority. They're not trying to stop the run. They want teams to run the football on them because they know that it's less likely their teams are going to score if they're running and not throwing the ball. So they're going to let teams run on them if they so desire to.
Debro, what are you keeping an eye on?
I think when Jacksonville goes to the air, it's going to be a lot of Evan Ingram. And I did not think I was going to be touting Evan Ingram walking into week 3, but here we are. As the tight end 12, it's been gross. I'm not telling it's been fantastic, but we weren't routes out of our tight ends. We went targets. Evan Ingram's getting both of those. He's 12th in targets. He's 10th in target share and 11th in routes run this year. And he goes up against the Chargers defense that's been bad versus tight ends in 2 straight seasons. They're 18th in DVOA. They've given up top 6 marks against receptions and receiving yards allowed to tight ends. So another top 12 week for Evan Ingram. And if Chargers are going to keep pace, because and we don't know if Keenan Allen's going to play this week. That's still up in the air. Mike Williams came back from the grave last week. 2.35 yards per route run in that matchup. He's going to run 85% of his routes against Shaquille Griffin and Tyson Campbell, who have allowed 119 and 93 passer ratings, respectively. I think Mike Williams could still be a fantastic option in fantasy and this week. I'm probably going to be slotting him somewhere in my wide receiver 2 territory. Maybe gets up to wide receiver 1 if Keenan Allen does miss this game.
Rams at Cardinals. Erickson, key matchup?
Looking at these Rams wide receivers against the Cardinals secondary that really hasn't been able to stop anyone this season. So 32nd in pass defense EPA, 2nd highest touchdown rate, yards per attempt, and 1 overall in passer rating allowed. So I expect these guys to be productive, but it's just a matter of, will Allen Robinson get any targets? Like, that's the real question for him. He only had 5 targets last week, 4 catches for 43 yards. He also added in a score. There was a clear effort to get him more involved in the red zone. He had multiple end zone targets. He hauled in 1 for a touchdown, but still just a 14% target share. His target rate per route run ranks in the bottom 5 among wide receivers with at least 5 targets. So I have concerns about whether he's really going to get the rock. I think that he'll see a decent amount of Byron Murphy, who has moved out of the slot and is now playing more on the perimeter, which basically opens up things for Cooper Kupp inside to go against guys like Chase Whitaker, an undrafted former undrafted free agent, you know, trying to guard Cooper Kupp. Like, I mean, this is a layup. This is Cooper Kupp over 100 yards again. Like, that's what's going to happen here. You look at Kupp against the Cardinals defense last year, averaged 14 targets in those two games he played against the Cardinals. So I just don't think they're going to have any answers for Cooper Kupp. And that just makes things easy for Stafford to just target Kupp and not necessarily look Allen Robinson's way that often.
As Friedman likes to put it, low-hanging fruit talking about Cooper Kupp here. Friedman, who are you talking about in this one?
Yeah, some more low-hanging fruit. Kyler Murray, one of the most exciting players in the league, single-handedly brought the Cardinals back last week. I'm taking the over 19.5 fantasy points in the No House Advantage contest. Historically, this Rams pass defense has been tough, but they've been bad this year. Week one, sure, you get a pass against the Bills. Everyone gets a pass. But week two, they looked bad against Marcus Mariota and the Falcons. They can still get after the quarterback, but they're number 27 in pass DVOA, number 31 in dropback success rate. This could be a tough spot for them. And I'm just going to say, like, if they're not good this week, this might be a litmus test where it's like, hey, this is a defense that you don't have to worry about avoiding this year.
Debra?
I'm actually going to be taking the over for Kyler Murray as far as the point total, because I think he's going to be playing catch up, because I think if the Rams are not going to be able to throw the ball a ton, or even if they are doing it, I think their running backs can have a lot of success on the ground this week. So firing up Darrell Henderson, Cam Akers, yes, that Cam Akers, as RB3 options with upside against a Cardinals run defense that right now is 29th and 28th in second level in open field yards. They're allowing the second highest explosive run rate. So if the Rams are just running away, there I did it, with this game, Kyler Murray is going to have to keep pace.
Game 12, Falcons at Seahawks. Friedman, another ugly one.
Yes, I specialize in talking about the ugly matchups, but this matchup I don't think is going to be quite so bad. I'm looking at Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf against the Atlanta secondary. At least I'm talking about like skill position players and not offensive line, defensive line. The Falcons defense is number 30 in dropback success rate, and Geno Smith is the kind of quarterback who's fine taking what a defense will give him, and that means Tyler Lockett could go off in our bold calls piece this week. I said I think Lockett goes for 100 yards and a touchdown. Maybe that's not that bold, considering that Lockett had 107 yards and 11 targets, 9 receptions last week. But look, I can only be so enthusiastic about wide receivers who are tied to Geno Smith. And, you know, suggesting that even any Seahawks player in this offense might score a touchdown feels sufficiently bold. But I think Lockett is going to be the player targeted the most in this game. And the Falcons are strong on the perimeter. They've got cornerbacks A.J. Terrell and Casey Hayward, but they are really vulnerable in the slot. They now have safety turned corner Eric Harris playing there. And that's after undrafted rookie D. Alford and journeyman Mike Ford underwhelmed in week one. It might honestly end up being like a rotation of all of those three guys in the slot. It's absolutely disgusting, but none of those three guys can hang with Tyler Lockett. And I still like DK Metcalf, supremely talented. The one-handed catch he had last week was awesome. It was called back for a man illegally downfield. Such trash, but whatever. The Falcons defense is number 3 in most fantasy points per game allowed to wide receivers. I think that there is actually room for both of these guys to go off this week, because Pete Carroll did say that they need to open things up a little bit more for Geno Smith. So given the matchup, we could see them throw a little bit more. Maybe both of these guys have good performances.
Erickson, I am begging you, please, please, please tell me this is the week Kyle Pitts finally busts out.
Keep the faith with Kyle Pitts against this Seattle secondary. Look, I got faith, man. 91% route participation from week two. That's an elite number for a tight end. And look, Arthur Smith has used Cordarrelle Patterson the right way. He's used Drake London the right way. And he's using our guy Kyle Pitts in the slot. We saw his slot rate increase to 50% last week, which means he's going to see a lot, potentially, of rookie cornerback Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant has led a perfect passer rating when targeted this season. So if Pitts is getting more opportunities inside, I think he could feast and really have that breakout game that we've all been waiting for.
Debro, you're also looking at the Falcons offense?
I mean, come on, it's Drake London season, baby. If it's not going to be Kyle Pitts breaking out, it's going to be Drake London continuing to do the things that he's been doing, which is some pretty alpha stuff. I mean, we're looking at a guy that's top 5 in target share and target per route run rate. He is PFF's 6th highest graded wide receiver and 12th in yards per route run. So I mean, y'all have talked about a bunch of wide receivers, Kyle Pitts, we are keeping the faith. Drake London, I'm just going to keep playing good players. So I think he's going to have a fantastic week against the Seattle secondary. And if Drake London goes off, hell, if Kyle Pitts goes off with him, Marcus Mariota is going to come along for the ride. One of my favorite streamers this week going against a Seattle pass defense that is allowing the eighth highest pass success rate per dropback, the highest EPA per dropback, and sixth in yards per attempt allowed. Marcus Mariota can get it done through the air and through his legs. I think that he's got dark horse top 12 potential this week.
Erickson, game number 13, Packers at Bucks, a marquee game, at least in terms of the names of these two teams and the quarterbacks. What matchup are you looking at?
I'm looking at Leonard Fournette against this Packers run defense because of all the injuries that the Buccaneers have at the receiver position. I think that their offense is really going through their running game now, and it's an advantage that they can take in this matchup. So second most rushing yards allowed per game, the Green Bay Packers through the first 2 weeks of the season. Fournette absolutely got fed last week, over 26 touches. And we're seeing the Buccaneers take a more operation ground and pound approach. Through the first 2 weeks, they've posted a negative pass play rate over expectation, which is vastly different than it was last year, where they were nearly top of the league in terms of passing the ball over expectation. So Green Bay has a very great pass rush. So if Tampa Bay is going to come out with a win, they're going to have to establish the run to keep the pressure off Tom Brady and not make him win with his arm, because frankly, they're not going to be able to do that with the weapons that he has at his disposal currently.
DeBro, what are you looking for from the other running backs in this game?
I think it's going to be a lot of running back action in this game, and we've seen Green Bay do that. They're playing slow, and they're utilizing both of the running backs, and I think it's another great days for Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. I have both of them ranked inside my top 15 running backs, and everybody's scared about the name of Tampa Bay versus running backs. This is not the same run defense that we've seen in previous seasons. They're 27th to 24th in adjusted line yards and second level yards right now. They're allowing the third highest rushing success rate. And if these backs aren't getting it done on the ground, they're going to face a defense that was 22nd in DVOA versus receiving backs last year, allowing the second most receptions and fifth most receiving yards. So fire up Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon with confidence this week.
Friedman, is it really going to be a running back game with Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady in this one?
Yeah, I mean, guys, my stomach is getting sick from all this low-hanging fruit I'm eating. But I'll talk about the two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. But the thing is, like, you're probably not starting them in this game, or you probably don't want to have to start them in this game. I have both of them outside the top 12 this week. 2 years ago, the total for Bucks-Packers was 55. This year, I'm looking right now at the Betting Pros odds page. The consensus line is 42. That is a massive discrepancy. These are two, as you guys mentioned, two run-heavy teams with injuries at offensive line, diminished wide receiver groups, and maybe the two best secondaries in the league. Like, maybe we get a vintage throwback game from Brady and Rodgers, but I'm skeptical of that. This is a bad spot for both of those guys on paper.
Sunday night football, 49ers at Broncos, looked a little more exciting before the Trey Lance unfortunate injury. DeBro, what is the key matchup here?
I think if San Francisco is going to have a chance in this game, I think they're going to have to play good defense and they're going to have to run the ball. So that means a lot of El Jefe. Jeff Wilson, I think he's going to get 20 plus touches again in this matchup. He had 40% of the team's carries last week, and Denver has not been able to stop anything related to running backs. They're 28th in open field yards, allowing the 11th highest explosive run rate, 12th highest success rate right now. Jeff Wilson got 20 plus touches last week. He's easy in line for this one, and I think if San Francisco pulls off the win versus Denver, he's going to be a massive part of it.
Erickson, what are you looking at?
Well, I can only look at one player because I'm legally obligated to. It's Courtland Sutton, who balled out with Jerry Jeudy out of the lineup last week, 39% target share, 50% air yard share. He just needs to cash in on some of these red zone targets, 0-for-4 on converting them into touchdowns. They called one back that he clearly was not out of bounds in last week. So I think he's going to cash in here against the 49ers secondary that's given up a lot of big plays. They faced 7 attempts over 20 yards. They've given up 4 completions on those plays. So Russell Wilson, 4th in yards per attempt under pressure this season. So even if the 49ers pass rush gets to Russ, I think Russ can make some magic, get the ball to Sutton downfield.
Over under 2.5 touchdowns for Sutton, Erickson.
God. I'm going to take the under here.
Friedman, what are you looking at?
I'm looking at Erickson and wishing he had some conviction with Sutton. Come on, three touchdowns.
Has anyone caught three touchdowns yet
this
year?
Take the over. Come on.
All right. I'm looking at Deebo Samuel, you know, other wide receiver in this matchup, and Javonte Williams as well. You know, Deebo with Jimmy Garoppolo back at quarterback, we could see Deebo unlocked. More short passes, which plays to his strength as a yards after the catch weapon. No Eli Mitchell, no Tyrion Davis Price at running back, and no Trey Lance to take carries away. So Deebo could have 5 to 8 carries, maybe even 10 carries in this game, just depending on how things go. So now that we've had a week to game plan with Jimmy G at quarterback, we'll see how Deebo is used. And then Javonte Williams, tough matchup against the 49ers defensive line, but he had 15 carries, 4 targets last week. You know, he's still splitting work with Melvin Gordon, but the committee has shifted a little bit more towards Javonte Williams. Let's see if it continues to shift towards him this week. If that happens, like, we need to move Javonte up our running back rankings.
Really quickly, Friedman, Javonte got a ton of work in the passing game in week one, didn't get quite as many looks in week two. Do you think that we're going to see him catching a lot of passes out of the backfield in this one?
No, I mean, I think, you know, 4 to 6 targets is a reasonable estimation for what we'd expect.
Let's move to Monday Night Football, game number 15, Cowboys at Giants. Debro, what is the key matchup?
Cowboys are going to have to run the ball, and I think they're going to have success with it. And yes, that means Ezekiel Elliott is going to come along for the ride. It's going to be gross, and he's probably going to end up falling in the end zone once. But I think this is going to be a big Tony Pollard game. And I know Pollard did not get a ton of snaps in the last game, but he did turn his 13 touches into 98 total yards, 23% target share. I'm not saying he gets that many targets this week, but I think he's going to be featured against a Giants defense that's allowing the 10th highest rushing success rate and EPA to running backs. They're also 30th in DVOA against receiving backs, allowing the 8th most receiving yards and the most receiving touchdowns in the NFL. So as gross as it is, Zeke probably gets in the end zone in this one, and Tony Pollard just goes off.
Erickson?
Looking at Daniel Jones against this Dallas pass rush, and I'm praying for Daniel Jones, praying for you, Danny Dimes, because I do not like this spot for him. They have the second worst matchup per PFF's O-line D-line matchup chart. The Giants' offensive line has been good run blocking, not great in pass blocking. The Dallas Cowboys' pass rush ranks 2nd in pressure rate, 3rd in sack conversion. So Daniel Jones in this passing game, that he ranks 30th in air yards passing, 160.5 per game. There's no upside in this passing game, and Daniel Jones is going to be running for his life against Dallas. So downgrading all my Kenny Golladay shares.
Friedman, for the final time today, here's the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, I mean, in the offseason, we were all so excited about CeeDee Lamb, so excited about Saquon Barkley. I mean, obviously, we're still excited about Saquon, but he's got a tough matchup. The Dallas defense, it looks good, but Saquon is the Giants offense. 282 yards on 39 carries, 11 targets through 2 weeks. That is elite usage. I think we see, you know, sort of like your typical Saquon Barkley is still good type of performance in this spot. He's still, I'd say, you know, anywhere from RB4 to RB8 in this week in our rankings. But CeeDee Lamb, man, low-end wide receiver too. He's had 11 targets in each of the past two games. So that is obviously very good. Of course, he's being outproduced by Noah Brown, a guy who, like, no one had heard of until, you know, like last week, the week before that. I'm worried that with how inefficient CeeDee Lamb has been with his targets and then how well Noah Brown has performed, that Lamb might actually start to lose some targets. And he's got a tough matchup this week against cornerback Adoree Jackson. So I have Lamb at wide receiver 19 right now. I feel I can't bump him down any further than that because of the volume, like 11 targets in each of the past 2 weeks. Like, that is significant volume, but I'm also worried that I have him too high. So, like, if you have him, you're starting him, but you don't feel good about it at all.
Let's dig into the listener mailbag.
Guys, let's get one quick mailbag question here to end the show. A good time to remind the listeners that if they want even more access to our analysts, please be sure to join us on Discord at fantasypros.com/chat. A premium subscription will get listeners full access to our analysts through AMAs, stages, and more. The question today, in a team that went full zero RB in the draft, what is the best running back you can get for Rashad Bateman? Debro, what do you think?
Oof. I think that you could probably get one of the guys we talked about in the show on the rise. I think Damian Pierce, all the draft hype is kind of like that luster's gone away a little bit. I think Bateman, you could maybe get Pierce and maybe a little sauce on top of it.
Erickson, would you be comfortable with a trade like that or looking for someone else?
No, I think that Pierce is a guy that you should definitely go after. It may not be a one-for-one where you may need to package Bateman or try to get multiple pieces back. I still like Ramondre Stevenson as a buy low. You know, the fact that he played 62% of the snaps in week two, you know, significantly higher than his first week. I still believe in Stevenson to be the best playmaker on this Patriots offense. It just doesn't have a lot of playmakers. So I think he's going to see an increased role. We're seeing it already in the receiving game. It's going to convert into yardage, into points sooner rather than later. So I like going after Stevenson.
Friedman, how about you?
Yeah, a couple guys. It's not going to be a straight one for one, but some guys who are kind of in that range of RB that I would like to try to buy low. Jeff Wilson, I think there's going to be like a lot of hesitation about his role in the 49ers backfield. I think he's someone who's too cheap right now. I think Miles Sanders is still too cheap because, you know, he still has that history of not scoring touchdowns, but he's in an offense that can just tear it up. And then I'll also say like Alvin Kamara, I think there's, you know, some hesitation about his role within New Orleans, you know, more of a pass first offense, but not passing to him, and he's injured. But, you know, if he comes back, he's still Alvin Kamara. So maybe there's an opportunity to try to buy low on him.
Let's wrap it up there, fellas. Thank you all for another awesome episode. Everybody listening, please remember to check out My Playbook this season for all the tools you need to dominate your leagues, plus those awesome opportunities with Manscaped and No House Advantage. Thank you, the fans, for listening. For Friedman and Erickson and D-Bro, I'm Ryan Wormley. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network,
available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.